Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Betches Media presents.
Madam Speaker, Madam Vice President.
You want to hang out with us? Get your vaccine.
And so I went to Human Resources.
There's some things I just can't tell you on air.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
A woman's problem, if you will.
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Caitlin Bird.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. Today is Wednesday, January 5th. Sammy and I were chatting this morning about how this evening begins that 12-hour period last year when it really looked like John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock both won. We took the Senate, and there were about 6 hours where it felt amazing. And then on our TVs, it all got on fire.
I mean, I truly will never forget my mom calling me that morning and being like, are you going to watch the certification of the election? And me being like, I wasn't planning on it, but I guess I will. And turning on the TV, and slowly but surely they kept being like, something's going on at the Capitol also. And like, for a little while, it was in a smaller box under the certification. Mm-hmm. And then it became the big box.
Oh, yeah. That was such a moment. Yeah.
They were like, I was
right after the podcast. Definitely record. Yeah.
I went back to work. Yeah. I was doing remote office work at that point. And I was like, okay, so it's on in the back. Like, I didn't have it. I was like, okay, MSNBC is like on in the background and mute. And I was like going, you know, doing my thing. And then I was looking and like Twitter had popped up, and I was like, I usually keep Twitter off when I was working, but then it was like, something is happening. And I was like, what the f-? Yeah. So it was like, and I was so excited too. It's like, we have a Democratic majority. This is the moment. Like we did it. We scrapped, we clawed it back. We got a Black preacher and a Jewish journalist who are going to be representatives from Georgia, senators from Georgia. This is amazing.
And then we have a majority, and everyone's going to agree, and we're going to pass so much legislation with our rock solid majority.
And the filibuster immediately canceled.
I'm just glad that Mitch McConnell wasn't majority leader anymore. I think that was the extent of my
That did feel really good. That's a good point. Now, that was an incredible, incredible period. But yeah, I mean, just, I guess we can take a moment to marvel at the passage of time, a full year since that. Does it feel like longer since that or not that long?
It feels like both longer and shorter. Like, it feels like both it happened forever ago and also like, oh my God, I can't believe that it's been a year since that happened. Like, I feel both in equal measure, which is strange.
Mm-hmm. It's like pandemic time too, because like we live like about a decade every week. And then it's like, we're all at this point, like Methuselah, we're like, I'm 700 years old. Like, it feels like time is like dilated so badly. At the same time, it's like, did we really just experience a coup? Like in the last, like it's because it's like, oh my God, that was so recent. Like, how is it, how have we not done more?
Exactly. Yeah.
Perhaps.
And that's what we're going to chat about. We're going to come back to the insurrection, of course, but we're going to start with some news out of Congress, which is that yesterday, Republican Representative Devin Nunes officially resigned from Congress. He said he was going to do this, but yesterday it was effective immediately. He has served a California district for 20 years. He's only 48. I didn't know. He does not seem charismatic enough to have been elected to Congress at 28.
Yeah, but he serves in like Orange County or something. Like, you don't need that much charisma to lock that.
The thing about it, there's so many districts that are just like, they're just tiny and no one's thought about them. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, this person's been here for like 60 years. And you're like, what the f-? Really?
Yeah.
Devin Nunes.
That's why, like, we were talking recently about how, like, Josh Duggar is, like, one of the Duggars. He keeps running for state senate in Arkansas, and he keeps losing. And it's like, dude, your whole family should be, like, most of the votes in the district, and your family's voting against you, dude.
Like, yeah, you do not. Somebody at the dinner table is not casting a ballot for you, my dude.
Yeah, I mean, there's something, these districts are weird, like the one with Marjorie Taylor Greene, and it's like Madison Cawthorn represents like a weird part of North Carolina that includes parts of Asheville, which is like the San Francisco of it's even like weirder than San Francisco, and none of it makes sense. So this guy is leaving also because he was probably going to get fired. I think he quit before he got fired. With redistricting, a rare bright spot in redistricting is that, well, California district redistricting is kind of chaotic. I was trying to read about it this morning, but basically Nunes's district, he was going to basically get like bought out of it. A sitting Democratic House member was basically going to run for that seat and he wasn't going to win. So I guess he quit while he was ahead. But I just think it's so funny that he was just like, fuck it. I'm gonna go, because he's leaving an open seat for 140 days. If a Democrat did this to us, we would be fucking furious, right? I mean, we would be up
especially
in arms.
Especially since the margins are so slim in the House, yeah. It's like particularly asshole-ish. But, you know, that's what you get for putting your trust in Devin Nunes. People, the man's an idiot. He disgraced himself like a gazillion times over when he was in charge of the House Intelligence Committee.
Oh God, what a terrible sentence.
Ironic post.
I know.
Never more ironic.
He sued a Twitter account of his own to pretending to be his cow. Like, he's an idiot.
Devin Nunes cow. Really made the most of his 20 years. He is leaving to, of course, be the CEO of Trump's new media company. But for the next 140 days until a special election is held for his seat, the Democratic majority is basically expanded from 8 to 9 votes. I mean, I'm not sure it really matters with the current fractures. Like, I'm not sure. But I did send you both a National Review article, which warmed my heart, because the guy was like, Devin Nunes has betrayed us. He has handed Nancy Pelosi an extra vote and he has completely diluted the impact of the squad to defect. And I was like, well, sucks to suck. Okay.
Yeah. Like, okay, well, Devin Nunes is really selfish and only looks out for himself. And that's why you guys elected him. So.
I mean, like a Republican seeking his own, something that's only beneficial to him and not at all beneficial to the collective. Interesting. Yeah. I'm completely shocked by this. I had no idea.
What do you think the onboarding package includes at Trump Technology? What do you think is in the backpack?
I think it's just an
NDA. It's just a lengthy NDA.
It's just a rolled around piece of paper, fits in the backpack.
And a promise that you'll be paid net 30. It's only it's net 30.
Like, yeah, 100%. Yeah, they're like,
they're going to be paid with 30. Melania's NFTs.
Well, 100%. 100%. You're paid in Trump bucks. You can use it like the gift shop at Trump Tower or whatever to get like a taco at the restaurant there. But it's also so sad to me because this media company is actually the thing. This was Donald Trump's whole plan time was that he wanted to run for president, lose, and start a media company. He accidentally won and now we all live in hell. But
accidentally. Yeah.
Okay. Accidentally on purpose won and now we live in hell. But he really just has wanted to start this media company. And I'm like, I wish we could have just gotten here in 2016.
Yeah, precisely.
Thinking about what Hillary Clinton could have accomplished, I'm not sure that a Trump-run media company would have been the best version for our country. But it would be significantly better than where we are right now.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yes.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Maybe. I'm maintaining hope. That
yeah, in this alternate reality, we remain hopeful.
His businesses always fail, so my feeling is that the media company will fail well. But yeah. Who knows? Because now he has, you know, now he's too big to fail.
So yeah, and then Nunes will be unemployed and rely on the Democrats' proposed social safety net.
Well, look at that.
Wouldn't that be amazing? It
wouldn't matter. It wouldn't change anybody's mind. To the insurrection, folks. So tomorrow, as we said, marks a year since the attack on the U.S. Capitol. Just going to run through some facts and figures and then just some like guiding questions for our discussion. 727 people have been charged so far with a maximum sentence of 41 months. Biden is going to address the nation.
QAnon shaman, I think.
Exactly. And one other dude, I believe, or lady.
Two people got 41 months, and one of them is the QAnon shaman.
I died at the newsletter. Today's newsletter was so funny. What did you say? Like, don't forget to leave some ayahuasca out tonight for the QAnon shaman.
Yes, because it's Koopsmas Eve.
Oh, gorgeous. So Biden's going to address the nation tomorrow about ongoing threats to democracy, I guess. And former President Trump, he was going to speak from Mar-a-Lago, with sources saying he intended to defend the rioters, which is just like fucking crazy. I mean, remember when he spoke in Oklahoma on Juneteenth? Did he cancel that? I don't even remember. It doesn't even matter. But he canceled this one. He did. Yeah. Due to also, quote, total bias and dishonesty on part of the media. And I guess just knowing that the House Select Committee is listening. Mm-hmm. Trump was, of course, impeached for this, for inciting an insurrection. He was acquitted, but it was the most bipartisan impeachment ever. As I was like reading about this today, it's just crazy that we're like, did this man commit crimes? It's like, he incited an insurrection. You already all decided that.
I know. And he also like was planning to do it again tomorrow. Like that's what he was going to do. It's just so crazy. It's crazy to think that he wasn't fully removed from office for that. And it's also crazy just because Ukraine's been in the news again. I've been thinking a lot about his first impeachment and being like, oh, right, Volodymyr Zelensky and the whole gang.
it's kind of, it feels very, it feels like what Nixon said in like Frost Nixon, where he was like, if the president does it, it's not a crime. Mm-hmm. And this is like, well, people at that time were like, no, it's absolutely a crime. That's why you resigned in disgrace. And why you, like, it was just such a revealing thing that his whole mentality, we were like, wow, really dodged a bullet there. I mean, we didn't, he dodged it for us by leaving rather than going through this process. But like, people were mad about Ford pardoning Nixon and like him getting away with it. And now it's just like, whatever, who cares? Sure, let the guy do whatever he wants. He definitely incited a mob that was going to murder all of us. But on the other hand, we can't win without him. So potato, potato, collapse of the United States government.
Maybe Nunes is just getting out because he's like, I'm safer here. I'm safer working for the Trump technology company. I mean, that's funny to me that he is canceling because of potential optics when Trump literally just fucking endorsed Viktor Orban, who is the fucking authoritarian leader of Hungary, like without a doubt. It's not in question whether Hungary is like near. That is insane.
Bolsonaro. Like these are a Putin. I mean, you've got these authoritarian leaders who very obviously are oppressed. Like, it's not even a question. Like, they are straight up authoritarians. They are fascists. This is no longer a like, oh, maybe a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Like, it's the same. And Trump is the same here, except that we don't treat it like that. And so it's kind of like, oh, you know, it was just a bunch of protesters. And it's like, no, those were basically the American modern version of brown shirts. These are people who have been activated. They wear their Trump flags. They use insignia to show that they are part of a certain group. They want you to know it. They are proud of it. And they walk around the streets armed. They walk around the streets dangerous. And they want you to know that they will hurt you if you question them. And this is
what we act like this is normal. It's insane. It's wild.
Yeah.
It is toxic. This is not a healthy society, folks.
But we can still, there's still time. Like, that's the thing. It's like recognizing that this is happening. It's very much like addiction, where it's like, I see you're addicted to fascism. Would you like to acknowledge this problem? And then we can start unraveling it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's America.
That's very gentle. I like that. So this anniversary comes as the Senate has turned its focus to voting rights. I think they think that is strategic. And as the January 6th committee heats up. So we talk about this committee vaguely all the time, but let's going to get a little bit more specific about what they're doing, what they can do, what the impact of what they can do will be. The House panel doesn't have the authority to pursue criminal charges, but it can provide the Justice Department with evidence of any wrongdoing it finds in its investigations or of a crime. And they have like a bunch of like federal prosecutors, like they have a big, robust staff working on this. They have 35,000 documents and it can use its subpoena power to try to procure this evidence. But like it has tried to do that. And I mean, it's tried to do that
Meadows and Bannon aren't doing it. And Bannon's like contempt trial isn't until July 18th. So if I were a Republican, a better, I would not be in any rush at all.
It's just so ridiculous to me that, and I know it sounds like a broken record, but like that if you're wealthy and you can pay a fancy lawyer, you can just effectively avoid trial by delaying it. Whereas again, we have people mm-hmm. who go to jail for crimes they didn't commit because they can't pay like bail. Mm-hmm. So it just, I mean, it just makes me.
Yeah, this man is
personally thought you had to respond to a subpoena. That was my impression that I got from how it works is that if you're.
No, you get 8 months of until you even get like held to account about it. Apparently it's an 8 month.
Yeah. That's one of the things that's actually part of their strategy. Like they yes. know that if they resist subpoenas, there's not going to be any consequences for it. And the consequences are going to take a lot of time.
Why can't we expedite
that like, Democrats need to get closer to the truth?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I have ideas, but we're going to get to that.
Yeah. But I mean, this is always my question. Why can't we expedite these things? Why can't it be like, you know what? This is urgent. We're going to put them on trial right away. I don't understand. Get it together. Like these, is it just a lack of will? Like in a lack of the entire legal system to be like, yeah, we need to prioritize this. This man cannot wait, like hang around for 8 months when he has information about what caused an insurrection.
My understanding is that it kind of comes down to individual judges. And so that we kind of like a judge could fast track it or they could not. I know that the committee has asked the Supreme Court to expedite hearings about Trump's personal documents and the whole rigmarole he's trying to pull there with executive privilege. So they can like ask, but mm-hmm. I think it's up to the court to say like, yay or nay. And I feel like it just comes down to so much of what we've seen as far as like the Trump era, which is just that like, our system is not responsive to crises in a way that maybe the modern world require. Like we are, our world moves at such a fast pace that like the way that our system works, it just fails to address issues in a timely manner.
It's interesting that like, an 18th century system bizarrely cannot keep up with a world that runs on electricity and the internet.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of weird that George Washington didn't already see that we were going to have internet. It's, you know, stunning, who could have imagined that we might need to change things?
Literally, they're not making Blackberries anymore, but we can't update the goddamn Constitution.
Well, Madison Cawthorn tweeted this week, he was like, the founding fathers would be horrified if they saw our country today. And I'm like, yeah, they'd probably be pretty confused. Like, yeah, they're just screaming. They're like, that woman's wearing a tank top, like losing their mind.
You call that an abortion now?
Like, oh no.
Yeah, exactly. Who are all these people walking around free? Like, of course they would be horrified.
I mean, they'd also be surprised that, like, the magic plates that we have. Like, this is a weirdo, but it's in your hand.
Imagine if they just did not care about any of our crises, and they're just like, you guys, you can get around. You're flying.
Well, literally, like, the founding fathers coming back to modern America would just be all of them stepping into traffic immediately and screaming. They'd be like,
ah! The only one I think who'd be okay would be Ben Franklin, who'd be like, this shit is wild. Where can I fuck some ladies? And we'd be like, that's actually much easier. Much easier. Yeah.
They're around. We're around.
Oh, people like, this society changed a bunch. You guys can fly now? That's crazy. All right. But first, where are women? Like,
where are the women?
Right. Well, it's almost like they thought, like, oh, our legal system is set. Like, how much damage can be done between now and July 18th? How many carrier pigeons? How many stories will get to like the local newspapers? Maybe not a lot, but it's like there are thousands of crazy tweets every single day. So some crimes that the committee is specifically looking into, whether Trump and his allies committed fraud, basically by fundraising off the false claim that the election was stolen, but also whether Trump and his allies are criminally responsible for obstructing Congress by trying to stop the certification of electoral votes. It's also possible that Trump could be charged based on his inaction to stop the disruption to Congress's process. And Republican Liz Cheney has suggested that a Trump's dereliction of duty isn't covered by current laws. Perhaps it should be, and there should be stronger penalties. I feel, Caitlin, I feel like you are constantly able to reference, like, especially post-Civil War things built into the legal system that allow for these stronger penalties. So I'm like, are they just not willing to activate these because they don't see the parallels? Or do these processes need to be, like, expanded? Do we need constitutional amendments? Like, what is available that they're not using, and what can we make available right now?
We don't need anything new except will. Interestingly enough, after the Civil War, there were actually very few trials for treason, even though it was pretty obvious. It was extremely
pretty widespread.
a 4-year war of treason. Yeah. But two things, right? One was John Wilkes Booth conspiracy to kill the entire Lincoln government. It only hit Lincoln, but everyone in his major cabinet figures were on a list, and they were all supposed to be assassinated simultaneously in order to decapitate the government. So Andrew Johnson taking over kind of threw a lot of shit out. But the point is that they didn't actually hold trials for treason because they were afraid that people might not agree that it was. Go figure.
Interesting.
So a lot of these protections aren't really strong. They're really retroactive. And the same thing has to happen here, basically. It's just force of will. You know, this is a new crisis. The system was not designed to understand this because no one expected that anyone would ever do it. And this notion of like, okay, so we're going to make sure that he can't do the same thing that he did last time. It's like, you guys, that's barn doors, horse, et cetera. Like, you built these gorgeous padlocks. That's cool. But the horse is still down the street running around in the hospital. You know,
like, the horse is loose in the hospital.
This is where we're at. So, like, you can be like, we have secured barn doors now. No horse will ever do this again. It's like, that still doesn't solve the existing problem of the horse, like, grabbing children, running around the hospital.
You got to pick up the glass. Like, kids are stepping on glass everywhere because the horse was in the hospital. Like, you got to.
John Mulaney has no idea what he wrought with the horse in the hospital. But
it was so perfect, though.
If anyone doesn't know what we're talking about, you got to go watch John Mulaney's most recent
New in Town.
The first one or Kid Gorgeous?
I think it's Gorgeous. Gorgeous. It might be Kid Gorgeous.
Yeah. It's his more recent special that would have come out after the 2016 election. And he has a very funny bit about a horse in a hospital.
He's referencing Trump, right?
Yeah. He says that the Trump presidency is like finding out that there's a horse in a hospital, and the worst days are when you don't hear from the horse at all, which I love.
it's basically true. The sense of our society and our Congress is just kind of like they're kind of trying to use these old tools to solve a problem that is brand new, and so they kind of just have to. I mean, we should talk about creating expedited subpoenas. I mean, we should be talking about, like, okay, so we're going to need to break rules. And that's also what Lincoln did. It's really important. Like, in the prosecution of the Civil War, he was, like, this close to being like, can I arrest Supreme Court justices? Can I just do that? Can I just under my war powers? And they were
creativity,
like, no.
Creativity. Have some goddamn imagination, at least, though.
Yeah. But he thought about it. He had a whole moment where he's like, could I?
Yeah.
That's where we need to be at. We all need to have our leaders being like, can we?
That's the other side. Is. Yeah.
Well, the other, I mean, I know, I'm sure Caitlin is more than well aware of this, but like the Emancipation Proclamation, when it was given out, wasn't like it wasn't considered legal by everyone. You know, like no, there was a lot
it was
of.
Absolutely illegal.
Yeah, it was like he really actually technically couldn't do that, but sometimes you gotta get caught trying, baby.
he was kind of like, you know what? Try me. That was basically what it was. He was just like kind of like, okay, I'm gonna do this thing. You wanna try me? Like, what's your argument gonna be that I don't have the right to do it? So what's gonna stop me? What's gonna stop me?
Right, they are using delay tactics for bad. We can use them. We can use them for good. I asked you you guys this morning, what are some other things that Democrats in Congress need to do this year, or I guess next, if somehow they manage to get a bigger Senate majority and keep the House, which I think will be dependent on what they do this year, to ensure accountability? And do you believe that they will do them? Like, what imagination do they need to have, right, and channel right now?
Anybody who, I think we should just take that third section of the 14th Amendment. I'm going to say it until somebody hears me.
Yeah. Why not?
You know, the third section of the 14th Amendment says you can't serve if you provided aid or comfort to people who tried to overthrow the government. It feels like we have really good evidence that lots of people in Congress, you know, basically have aided and abetted these people. And we have a whole year of them aiding and abetting. Like, we now know for sure that this was a coup. We're all here at the anniversary of the coup being like, it was a coup. And in the year between, like, Republicans have had time to do things that would not aid and abet the people who did this, but they haven't. They've done the opposite thing. They've encouraged more people to do more government overthrowing things.
Providing comfort as much as they can.
Yeah, they want these people to feel very comfortable. They're calling them protesters.
They would rock them to sleep if they could.
Exactly. Use the 14th Amendment and use your power in Congress to be like, we're just going to expel everybody. Throw redistricting into chaos. This is another thing that I really believe that we should do, is just the House should just take up the permanent
Reapportionment Act of 1929.
Yes. Just take it up and just like repeal it or change it to like 650 and then force states to figure out how they're going to find new congressional seats. Play around with power. Yeah,
or DC statehood. You know, I mean, that doesn't seem possible.
If you're worried about voting rights, but this is the easiest way to just fuck things up. It's like, okay, well, we agree that we can't change anything about this system. Oh, what? Except we're going to need 600 Congress people. It's the only way.
I mean, I agree. I just feel like it's time to get a little creative with it. But the other thing that I really feel like the committee has the power to do, number one, is just create the public record, which doesn't sound jazzy, but there has been
that's definitely their main objective.
Misinformation and crazy spinning of what has happened here. Like, that just getting information out in the open is really good. I think the committee has the ability to keep this in the minds and memory of the American people. And it's going to be up to the Democrats to do that as well. As far as like going, like, making sure new information gets the coverage that it deserves and et cetera. But also, it's really tough when it like these people actually testifying would do a lot of that. But if we're not going to active, like if people are just going to ignore subpoenas, that is what makes it hard for me to understand. Like, we need to actually see people testify and all of that stuff.
Yeah, I think we should run it like a political campaign. I mean, I understand that governing is not campaigning. This is really important distinction. But at the same time, if you are up against this massive propaganda machine, you're not going to win by being like, let's just do things right and dot all of our I's and cross all of our T's. And then once we're completely and utterly done, we'll release a report. Robert Mueller tried it. It did not work.
No.
It turns out you need some pomp and circumstance. So bring some pomp and circumstance, make it normal once a week to do a coup update. Hey, this is what's happened this week. This is what we find out about the coup. Be very serious about, like, this is an overthrow of our government. We are telling you what has happened. We are finding the people. They will never be forgiven. This, you just got to take some, you know, vengeance out. You know, get some energy for that.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, we need to take a few more cues from how the right handles this, because, you know, if any event, I mean, they're still talking about Ashley Babbitt, like they would hold this, they would be talking about this. There would be a dedicated hour every day to updates to this, if there were anything even close to it on right-wing news.
Well, they already organize around like the Black Lives Matter protests as if it was the insurrection. Like, totally. And they raised that kind of like alarm about all of that. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene's response to getting kicked off Twitter was to bring up like Maxine Waters riling up Black Lives Matter protesters, da da da. So like they find ways to make those issues last and last for them. But for some reason on our side, a literal actual coup that we all watched on TV, we have to find strategies to keep people thinking about it.
Right. And like, even on the day, it's like everybody was universally disgusted and that has not changed. So the more we can keep it sort of present. And so we've been talking so far about Democrats communicating this better themselves to their audiences. But how do you think mainstream media has handled coverage of the insurrection aftermath? Where can it improve? What roles does it have to play? I mean, I think the reason we're saying it needs to be more present in Democrats' communication is because it's not that present in mainstream news, because I feel like we're just accustomed. It's like, oh, another Republican completely defied a subpoena. Like that is abnormal. That is a slip into authoritarianism when these people just don't do, can just defy the laws. I mean, what do you think? How do you think the media has responded to the last year?
Well,
interviewing Republican swing voters about milk.
Yeah.
I think this might have to do with like my next question, which I read an article, I'll link it in the podcast this morning, but it talked a lot about how the media also sort of indulges like the Republican electorate is not that big. Their policies are not that popular. They win because of the structural advantages that they have given themselves and that they have like corrupted into the system. So when they lose, they feel very wounded and they feel like something's been taken from them that they never actually like fairly had. And I think the media really indulges this. And it's not just, I'm not saying they interview insurrectionists sympathetically, although they actually probably do, but it does come back to, you know, talking to people about inflation that like, why that indulges this concern that is not that widespread. Like all you see on CNN in the past 6 months is them just talking to swing voters who are clearly Republicans who watch Fox News. And the balance is just, as I'm talking about this, I think about, I listened to this podcast, it's called The Argument. It's a New York Times podcast. And they were talking, it was Jay Rosen, who's like one, their media commentator, and Russ Dothat, right? Yeah. And he's like sort of there. I don't know if he a Republican? He's like one of their kids more. Yeah. He's a Republican commentator. God. And they were both sort of arguing for like, Russ was saying, the media can't play into the right's idea that they're biased against them. Like they have to be balanced. And Jay Rosen was like, but the media like has to understand that democracy is crumbling and they can't give each side balanced weight when that's not what's happening. So I guess I've answered my own questions, just my frustrations. But yeah, it's this Republicans create this false sense that they are the dominant, they have the dominant point of view, and the media indulges it, and they need to stop.
Yeah. So I would point out that even having Jay Rosen and Ross do that on a podcast together is an exact example of just incredible bias, because Ross doesn't know shit. This has been demonstrated. He has a column. Like, does. I can go back. I can read every single one of them. I won't.
He's not typically right.
Myself. Yeah. But the point is that he very obvious. He actually said in December 2020, like, don't worry about Trump. He's not going to create a coup. You're all hyperventilating. And then afterwards, he was like, well, I kind of stand by. It wasn't as bad as you think. I was like, what the f-? Anyway, the point is that like Jay Rosen is a former journalist. He's someone who's a serious media study. So there you go. You got someone who actually is an expert in the field. And then this guy who's got dumb opinions, and they're both going to be talking to each other like they're equals on the subject of whether or not the media can cover this properly. Mm-hmm. His entire notion, I mean, Ross exists to create the notion that there's somebody out there who shares his opinions on a broad scale, which is not true. It's like him and you could fit all the never Trump Republicans into a Georgetown cocktail room. Like there's no one left there. Okay. That group is very small and they're not representative. Republicans are also
and they
not representative
also
of the country.
Disgusted by what's happening anyway. Like,
I mean, mad props to Jennifer Rubin. Can't believe that this is how I know we're in the darkest timeline. I agree with Jennifer Rubin and Bill Kristol on a regular basis where I'm like, Jesus Christ. I used to think when we were enemies, man. Like this is a good time. Remember you were a Rock War cheerleader? That's what has happened?
Right. And I do think it's like, I think it does. I mean, it might sound silly to connect, you know, CNN indulging conversations with alleged swing voters about economic issues to why we're not seeing serious outrage about the insurrection. But it's because if you indulge this idea that if you give more inflation to their ideas and point of view, it creates the impression that they are justified in storming the Capitol. Because it's like all these people we've been telling you all year.
Yeah, I just feel like in general with the media writ large, but like the 24-hour news cycle also is reflective of why we can't pay attention to anything. And it's like kind of the same issue that we see on Facebook when it's like you're reporting new news about the actual coup that happened, but also you're doing a story about milk. And also you're talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene's latest dumb shit that she said. Like it all gets jumbled up and people don't know where to put their attention. Mm-hmm. And it's actually an information overload. You end up in this situation where you feel like it's been both way too long and way too short a time since it happened. Like, mm-hmm. I just think the way that we consume our news, and it's not any one media company at all, but just the way that it is put out there, it's like impossible for your brain to determine which stories are the most important thing when really, like, yeah, the most important thing is the coup that almost happened exactly. last year. Like that's, I mean, there's the pandemic and the coup, and those are kind of the two big things, and everything else is tangential to those two major things.
I think there's the problem is that we talk about it, and it's like the point of politics coverage is not to cover the game, which is kind of what it feels like. It feels like everyone's kind of like, I'm the narrator in Game of Thrones. Like, bitch, no, you're not. Your job mm-hmm. is to cover the American government, and it's crumbling. The American government, the actual process by which we solve problems that affect society, is completely useless right now. I mean, you can talk about any issue, anything. I mean, not inflation. Inflation's some bullshit. We'll get to that later. Like, yeah. I understand everyone's afraid of stagflation, but we move on. COVID is a real problem. The economy, in terms of like taking care of people, which is the purpose of an economy, it's not just to make money. Oh, we just made a bunch of money. Everything's fine. Like, no, it's supposed to be to give to the
society. I thought the economy was the stock market.
That is true for like 10% of people.
Yeah.
You know, like we have these terrible frames. We're just like, it's just been going on for so long. People don't even know that the government is supposed to be doing things. And our coverage does not show that. And I was reading this piece by Daily Beast writer Matt Fuller just before I came on. And it was like, he was like, it's weird to stop and talk about Republicans who, you know, I know because he covers them. He's literally yeah. a reporter for Congress. And he's like, it's weird to have to stop and think about whether that person came into the chamber afterwards and voted to undermine democracy,
yeah,
to overthrow voters, to like that vote should have been a lightning point. Everyone who voted after the coup to support what Trump was doing should all be kicked out of Congress. And it's insane that we're just like, yeah, I guess continue negotiating with them, continue treating them like legitimate political entities. And Matt was like, maybe we should stop and think about how we cover these people. Maybe I shouldn't just be like, oh, Ron Johnson. He's like, he's saying crazy shit about the election, but I'm covering his inflation talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like,
that's interesting.
You're so close.
Yeah. I want to close with a little bit on the voting rights bill, because we said things that could potentially address this. I mean, Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer both publicly come out in favor of a filibuster carve out to pass it. I've been thinking, is carve out... Joe Manchin seemed very alarmed by the term carve out. And then he was like, once you carve a whole turkey, you got to eat. And I was like, then call it something else, man. I don't know. If you don't want to call it a carve out, call it something else.
It doesn't matter. He's going to figure out whims again. We're at like, he'll decide carve out is the wrong word, but then like, he'll say a number and then he'll decide, well, actually, like what he did with Build Back Better, where he was like, it has to cost this much. And then you give him a bill that costs that much. And he's like, it has to cost that much for 10 years. Like, he's going to constantly move the goalpost. I know today he said some sort of lukewarm things about potentially going back to a talking filibuster or at least allowing them to vote for debate. I just don't trust anything that he says. And yeah, I don't see how you could. Trust.
Right. And then we don't even know what Sinema's saying. But the craziest is like this bill, all this bill aims to do, it'll help with some of these things, but not really keeping insurrectionists accountable, just sort of attempting to mitigate some of the crazy shit that state legislatures are doing. It will basically ensure states have early voting, make election day a public holiday, and secure the availability of mail-in voting. So it's consistent, universal. It's just bare fucking minimum. Like, I would love to hear, maybe she said it, but like, demand, I do think it's so important to remind everyone and include when you're talking about this. This is also not a single Republican will vote for this. What the fuck is Lisa Murkowski's problem with making Election Day a public holiday? Explain that.
Ridiculous. I mean, she doesn't have to because she needs to deny votes for cloture. Like, that's the thing, that the filibuster is protecting Republicans from taking unpopular positions. It's defending them from having to even do the work of legislating. They don't have to do anything. They just need to prevent the discussion. And moderate Democrats like to be protected too. I mean, you can see Kyrsten Sinema, she doesn't want to have to take the votes. She's more of a show horse than anything else. You know, Manchin, he's getting off. This is a power trip for him. And he knows that he's in a very safe, super blood red state. He's the best Democrat you're going to get. So he can run rings around everybody else, because who are you going to replace him with? Democrats aren't trying to protect. There are actually more Republicans up this cycle than Democrats. But are Democrats aiming to seize power and really get the best candidates they can and create a unified strategy to keep the Senate or expand? No, they're not. They continue to talk to Republicans like, we're just colleagues. We're going to work this out, like Joe, motherfucker. Anyway, it's frustrating and it's annoying. I think we just need, like, again, that bold creative leadership. Lincoln was asking himself, can I arrest Supreme Court justices? Like, find that energy for yourself, you know? Like, can we just arrest people? This should be a question you ask yourself every day. I mean, come on, what's the Patriot Act for if we're not going to use it to actually, like, protect the country?
Do it. Cuff them.
Lock them up.
Yeah. Beautiful. Perfect. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Caitlin Bird.
And this is the Betches Sub Podcast. Bye.
The Betches Sub Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow @Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@Betches.com. Betches.